welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Mark Levonier, your host for this hour of crime. Later on, the adventures of Sam Spade from 1948. But first, the mysterious traveler with the tale Out of the Past. This Mutual Broadcasting System episode first heard on April 19th, 1949.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring tonight two of radio's foremost personalities, Santos Ortega and Ann Shepherd, in Out of the Past.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear Out of the Past. Your name is Joan Morgan. And as you stand looking over Central Park from your penthouse terrace on this beautiful spring day, you can't help but feel you're the luckiest woman living. You're young, attractive, fairly wealthy, and happily married to a Broadway actor. Yes, Joan, there's little more you could ask for. The doorbell rings. You run to the door to greet your husband, Keith, who's home from his matinee performance.
Hello, beautiful. How's my one and only?
Hello, darling. Oh, Keith, no wonder every actress wants to have you for her leading man.
Nonsense. I'll have you know the only person I kiss like that is my wife.
Better say that. How is the matinee today?
Fine. I got 7 curtain calls. Oh, here's the afternoon mail. I picked it up at the desk.
Anything for me?
I haven't looked it over, dear.
Oh, yes, here's one for me. 3 others for you, dear.
Let's see. This one's a bill from the hotel management. Darling, we're living beyond our means.
Oh, Keith, you're not going to start that again, are you? Well, we have over $500,000.
I've told you 12 times I won't touch that money. It's yours, not mine.
Darling, it isn't a question of it's being yours or mine. It's ours.
Joan, I made it clear to you when we got married that we'd have to live on the money I earn.
Then what'll I do with my money if you won't allow me to spend it?
Well, someday we'll have 6 children. You can save it for them.
All right, darling. I wonder who my letter can be from.
You rip open the envelope, Joan, as Keith looks at the rest of his mail. For a moment you feel as if your heart has stopped. Then it begins to beat wildly. Over and over you read the 2 sentences. A friend from Europe expects you tomorrow afternoon at 2:00 at the Hotel Edgewood. Please bring $25,000 in cash, or else I shall be forced to take action. John Benedict.
Joan, what is it? What's wrong, darling?
What did you say?
You look so upset. Is it that letter you're reading?
Letter? No. No.
Well, then, if it isn't the letter, what is it?
It's nothing, darling. Nothing at all. It's just... I have a headache.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I get you something?
No, Keith. No. I'll be all right. All I need is a little rest.
Come in, won't you, Joan? Sorry to have kept you waiting.
Martin, you must help me.
Why, of course, Joan. You know I'd do anything for you. Sit down and tell me about it.
Martin, I'm in trouble. I'm in great trouble.
Well, Joan, what is it? What's wrong?
I'm being blackmailed.
Blackmailed?
Yes.
By whom?
A man named John Benedict. I don't know who he is. But I received a letter from him yesterday afternoon.
There's only one thing to do, and that's to go to the police. I'll call the district attorney.
No. I can't go to the police.
Why not?
This man, Benedict, knows something I can't afford to have exposed.
What does he know, Joan?
Please, don't ask me. I know that You are my father's best friend, but I can't tell you. Believe me, if it ever gets out, it would ruin my marriage. My life. I couldn't stand to lose Keith. I couldn't. I'd rather die.
All right, Joan. I think you're making a mistake, but I'll help you. How much money does this man Benedict want?
A half hour later, you enter a dingy hotel and go to room 14. As Martin opens the door, he reveals a squalid, dimly lit room. For the first time, Joan, you see John Benedict. He's a tall, heavy man with coarse features and a thick black beard. In the half light, he appears to be about 50. His clothes are of fine English cut, but time and wear have taken their toll. He stares at you for a moment, Joan, then speaks.
How do you do, Mrs. Morgan? Won't you please come in?
Thank you. This is Mr. Walker, friend.
Yes, yes, of course. I trust you will forgive me these dismal surroundings, but alas, I am quite penniless.
So you thought it would be an excellent idea to blackmail this lady for funds?
I am afraid you misunderstand me, Mr. Walker. I am not forcing this beautiful lady to give me £5,000. Rather, I am, shall we say, requesting a loan.
Yes, but if she doesn't give you this loan, you'll ruin her marriage or her life.
It would distress me to ruin anyone's life. But then it also distresses me to live in a pigsty like this.
A much more suitable place would be the state penitentiary.
Martin, please don't talk like that.
Evidently, Mrs. Morgan, your friend is more interested in having me placed in prison than in saving you from disaster. I'm afraid you have not revealed our little secret to Mr. Walker.
No. No, I haven't.
Well, then, perhaps if we were to tell him, he would not be quite so eager to imprison me. Perhaps if he knew that at one time you had...
No, no, no. Don't say any more. I'll pay you.
Allow me to commend you on your good judgment.
Martin, give him the money. Give it to him.
Very well. Here's your filthy blood money.
Thank you. I think you have been very wise, Mrs. Morgan. Very wise indeed. Good day.
In the weeks that follow, Joan, you try to forget Mr. Benedict and the terrifying secret he shares with you. But you aren't successful, are you? Everywhere you go, you unconsciously find yourself fearfully looking for him. Life has become tense, frightening. Then one afternoon, while Keith is at rehearsal of a new play, you receive a phone call. A call that sends you in a panic to Martin Walker's office.
Martin, I've heard from him again.
Benedict?
Yes, he phoned an hour ago. He wants $50,000.
$50,000? Maybe now you'll have sense enough to let me turn this over to the police.
No, I can't do that.
You mean you're going to buy him off a second time?
Yes, I must.
But you can't. What's to prevent his extorting money from you a third or a fourth time? He'll squeeze you dry.
The money doesn't matter, do you hear? Nothing matters but keeping what Benedict knows from Keith. If Keith finds out, it'll mean the end of everything for me. Everything.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morgan. Oh, I see you brought Mr. Walker. And I was counting on a pleasant afternoon. May I take your call?
No.
Benedict, what do you mean by asking for $50,000? We paid you $25,000. That was supposed to keep your mouth shut.
Well, it has, up to now. But as you can see by this suite of rooms, Mr. Walker, it takes money to live lavishly. Therefore, I shall need more.
Well, you shan't have it. We paid you off once. We're not paying you off again. There's a limit to what anyone will pay.
Yes, quite true, Mr. Walker. But the limit has not been reached as yet.
You swine. If I had my way, I'd call the police and put you where you belong.
Mrs. Morgan, I'm afraid you are allowing your friend to go too far. I have but to pick up this telephone, and your world will come crashing down about.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't. Martin, give him the money.
But Joan,
give it to him. I can't stand this any longer.
Very well. Here it is, Benedict. But I warn you, you'd better not try anything further. There is such a thing as pushing a person too far.
I shall try to remember that, Mr. Walker. Thank you for your advice and the money.
You're trembling with fear as you leave Benedict's luxurious suite, aren't you, Joan? And even when you reach your own apartment, the fear hasn't left you. Weeks pass, and life is a nightmare. Every time someone knocks at the door or the phone rings, your heart begins to beat wildly. And worst of all, Keith senses something is wrong.
I'll answer it,
but I'm much closer to it, then.
Hello?
Is this Mr. Morgan's apartment?
Yes.
This is the stage manager at the theater. Will you please remind Mr. Morgan of the special matinee we're giving today?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll tell him. It was a theater calling, Keith, to remind you of today's special performance.
I haven't forgotten. It's only 5 of 2. I still have a few minutes before I have to leave. Joan.
Yes.
What is it, darling? What's come over you?
Come over me?
Yes. These past weeks, you've been just a bundle of nerves. Every time the phone rings or the mail arrives, you begin to tremble. What's wrong?
Darling, you're just imagining all that.
Joan, stop acting as though I were a child. I can see something's wrong, and I want to know what it is.
Keith, please. There's nothing. Who could that be?
Never mind, I'll get it.
No,
you
Keith,
just sit where
you are
and rest.
Look, darling, you have to get to the... To the... What's taking him so long? Why doesn't he come back? Keith? Who is it? Keith!
Joan, what is it? Why did you scream like that?
I didn't scream. Who was that at the door?
Well, it was just a special delivery boy. He brought this special delivery for you.
Special delivery?
Yes, here.
Thank you.
Aren't you going to open it? After all, it is a special delivery.
Yes. Of course.
I never saw anyone so afraid of a letter. Who's it from? Joan, what's wrong?
Nothing. Nothing.
Don't tell me that. You look as though you were going to collapse. Now, give me that letter.
No,
I said,
please, Keith.
Give it to me.
No, please.
Yeah, that's better. Perhaps this letter will tell me what's wrong. Well, it's only one sentence. I will phone you at 2. There isn't even a signature. Who wrote this note, Joan?
I don't know.
You must know, else why would you have grown so pale? I'll phone you at 2. It's almost 2 now. I'll wait for that call.
Keith, please. You must have faith in me.
All these weeks I've had faith, said nothing, hoping you'd tell me what was wrong. Now I must find out for myself. Well, right on time. It's just
Keith,
2 o'clock.
Please, don't answer.
Take your phone. Take your hand off the phone,
please,
Joan.
Please, Keith, no.
I said
I won't
take
let
your
you
hand
answer.
Off the phone.
Don't.
Hello? 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 No answer. Never called, hung up when they heard my voice. I suppose you won't tell me who it is? All right, then. I have to leave for the matinee now. I won't be home for dinner, but when I return after tonight's performance, we'll have this out once and for all.
Keith, please. I just can't tell you. If you'd only
go ahead,
wait,
Joan.
Keith. I can't. Oh, darling. If only I could tell you. If only I could. But I know you wouldn't want me then. How could you? How could you if you... Hello?
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morgan.
You promised you'd leave me alone, that I'd never hear from you again. That was only a month ago.
Yes, I know. But then, I am always making promises I cannot keep.
You've ruined everything, everything. My husband read the special delivery letter you sent. He answered the phone when you called a few minutes ago. How can I explain?
Oh, that should not be too difficult for a clever woman like yourself. And you are a clever woman, are you not?
What do you want? I'm tired of your playing cat and mouse with me.
I intend to call on you at 5:30 this afternoon.
I won't pay you another cent, do you hear? There's no end to your demands.
You may expect me at 5:30.
No.
And do not have Walker there.
No, I won't see you. I won't... Hello. Hello. Hello, I won't see you.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morgan. As you can see, I am right on time. It's exactly 5:30. This is a lovely penthouse you have. It's good to see you without Walker around.
How can you do this to me? I've never harmed you. Why do you insist on ruining my life? Why?
My dear lady, the last thing I desire to do is to ruin your life. Unfortunately, the world you and I live in being what it is, I am forced by circumstances to live by my wits.
If I give you the money now, how do I know you won't be back in another month?
Oh, that is very simple. Because after you pay me off this time, there would not be any point in my bothering you again.
What do you mean?
I mean, Mrs. Morgan, that this time I want $500,000.
$500,000?
Yes. If I am not mistaken, that is what the balance of your fortune amounts to. Do you not see? Once you have paid it over to me, there would be no point in my bothering you anymore. Simple, is it not?
You must be mad.
I? Oh, no, Mrs. Morgan, not I. Come now, you love your husband and he loves you. There are years and years of happiness before you. If he does not learn your little secret, you are wise. You will turn the money over to me.
I can't. I can't. If I were to withdraw $500,000, he'd find out about it.
Ah, but there is always the chance that he won't. If you do not do as I ask, I shall be forced to reveal the secret.
No,
no. Yes, Mrs. Morgan. Your husband will learn that while you were in England in 1939, you murdered your sweetheart.
I won't listen. I won't listen.
But your husband will. And he will learn that after you committed this murder, you spent the following 8 years in an English insane asylum.
No, no, you can't tell him. You can't.
Think of what a sensation the tabloids will make out of it. And think of what people will say.
No.
Your husband would have to divorce
you. No.
So, fainted, have you? That is not going to help you, Mrs. Morgan.
Martin, I just got your message at the theater. Where's Joan? What's wrong?
She's in her bedroom with Dr. Richards. It seems that she... Here's Dr. Richards now.
Doctor, what's wrong?
Keith, you must prepare yourself for a shock.
What's happened?
Half hour ago, one of your neighbors on the floor heard Joan weeping and screaming hysterically. The manager knew I was your doctor and sent for me.
But why was she weeping and screaming?
She's had a breakdown.
Breakdown?
Yes.
Well, I want to see her. I must.
Very well, Keith, but only for a moment. Mr. Walker, I'm afraid you'll have to wait here.
I understand, Doctor.
Keith, you must keep a grip on yourself.
All right. Joan. Darling. It's Keith.
You stay away from me. Stay away, both of you. Don't come near me.
Doctor, she doesn't even recognize me.
Yes, Keith, I know.
I know who you are. You can't fool me. One of you is Mr. Benedict. Maybe both of you are Mr. Benedict. Yes. I know what you're here for, but I won't let you. I won't let you.
She's completely out of her mind.
I know you're both Mr. Benedict. You can't fool me.
Who is this Benedict you keep talking about?
I don't know, Keith. She feels she's being persecuted by this Benedict fellow. He may be real, and again, he may be a figment of her imagination.
She's deathly afraid of us.
Yes, she sees everyone as this fellow Benedict. I tried to give her a sedative, but she grows violent when I approach.
Well, can't you do something for her?
I've already sent for an ambulance. She'd be much better off in a hospital where she can have constant medical care. Come along, Keith.
How is she, Doctor?
Well, it may be a long time before she recovers. I'm going down to the lobby, wait for the ambulance. I suggest you two stay here, keep an eye on her. I've left the door to her room open.
All right, Doctor.
Shouldn't be more than a few minutes.
How do you feel, Keith?
Tired, if you want to know.
That's only natural. These past 2 months have been quite strenuous for you. But with $500,000 and a wife who'll probably never be in any condition to ask you about it, you've done quite well.
Quite well? That's an understatement. Name one actor, living or dead, who could have given as great a performance as Mr. Benedict as I did.
You were superb as Benedict, I admit.
Superb? Why, I was magnificent. The costume, the makeup, my accent, simply perfect. I tell you, it was the greatest performance ever given. What a pity you weren't here at 5:30 this afternoon.
I'm sure I missed the performance of the age.
I outdid myself. You should have heard me.
Yes, Mrs. Morgan. Your husband will learn that while you were in England in 1939, you murdered your, sweetheart. That after you committed this murder, you spent the following 8 years in an English insane asylum.
Ah, it's really a pity I played my greatest role to an audience of one.
Well, yes, Keith, but you were probably the highest paid actor in the world. I'm sure that $500,000 for 2 months' work, less my share, of course, is something of a record.
Yes, it probably is.
I heard you, Mr. Benedict. But you can't fool me.
John!
I know one of you is Mr. Benedict. Or are you both Mr. Benedict? Yes. You both must be Mr. Benedict. That's clever. That disguise you use, that's clever. But you can't fool me.
She must have overheard you. That brought her out of her room. Yes,
no matter how many disguises you use, I know you. No, don't you come near me. Don't come near me.
Keith, she's got a gun.
Come
Joan,
near me.
Put that gun down.
I'm not going to let you tell. I'm not going to let
no, don't.
You tell.
Don't, Joan. Stop. You shot me. Oh, Joan, no. I'm not Mr. Benedict. He's...
You'll never tell Keith now. Never, never, never.
This is the Mysterious Traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip? Too bad about poor Keith and Martin. Such interesting scoundrels. That fellow Keith was certainly a remarkable actor, wasn't he? But like so many actors, he overplayed his role. With fatal results. What happened to Joan Morgan? Well, the poor woman was committed to an institution where after several years of treatment, she recovered completely. However, she still has a deathly fear of actors. Oh, you'll have to get off here, I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
You've just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. The role of the Mysterious Traveler is played by Maurice Tarplin. Others in the cast were Santos Ortega, Ann Shepherd, and Roger DeCoven. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from April 19th, 1949 on Mutual. And this was actually the third time the story was heard on radio, the first on the series in 1944, then again in a spin-off series of The Mysterious Traveler called The Sealed Book, which was headed up by the same writers and directors, Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, who shared both of those duties. The series was on the air from March through September of 1945, and The Mysterious Traveler show would repurpose about 10 stories from The Sealed Book for their program. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now on to The Adventures of Sam Spade. From August 1st, 1948 on CBS, it's The Dry Martini Caper.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, how did it go?
It was the end, Effie, but the end.
Oh, Sam, not another one of those society things.
Depends on what you mean by society.
Well, you know, Sam, cafe society. Cocktails for two, hands across the table. Make it another old-fashioned, please.
Let's not lose our head, Effie. Nothing but double martinis, very dry, with two olives, sweetheart.
Two olives?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sam, isn't that overdoing it?
It was all overdone, sweetheart. That's what cracked it. Now, stay right where you are. I'll be right down to mix up my report on the dry martini caper. Get it?
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. August is always a great vacation month. And for those of you planning to take your vacation soon, let me suggest that when you're packing, be sure you include a bottle and a handy tube of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. For no matter where you go, you can always depend on Wild Root Cream Oil to groom your hair neatly and naturally, relieve dryness, and remove loose dandruff. Yes, you can take it with you on your vacation, and you should. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Wise as an owl, sober as a judge, Ed.
Oh. Well, the way you talked on the phone, I thought you drowned the shamrock, kissed the Black Betty, spliced the main brace, decorated the mahogany, made a Dutch bargain, or, in a word, gone to give a Chinaman a music lesson.
Effie, I wish you'd spend more time with Harper's Bazaar while I'm gone and less with the thesaurus of slang.
Ah.
Didn't know I could say that. Are you sober?
Well, I've been riding the choo-choo and drinking Adam's ale. And if you don't believe it, just ask me to walk a chalk.
Okay, heelsy-toesy, arms akimbo, eyes glazed.
Yes, Sam.
Now, then, tip of the forefinger to the tip of the nose.
Oh. Oh, Sam, it makes me dizzy.
Dizzy Gillespie?
Dizzy Sam.
Exactly. And you are not sewn up, shagged, shellacked, shickered, stuccoed, tap-shackled, stiffo, or real crazy.
Well, you know best, Sam.
Good. Now try this one.
Yes, Prez.
Sitting posture, limbs cruciform.
What?
Cheesecake style.
Oh, Sam.
That's it. Now place the notebook. Just a little higher. Good. Yeah. Now apply the tip of the pencil to the top of the fool's cap and proceed viz.
Viz.
Date. August 1st, 1948. To Mrs. Netta Martini, 1000 Marina Boulevard, San Francisco. From Samuel Spade, license number 127596. Subject, Dear Netta. The first I knew of the caper was day before yesterday morning when I saw your husband's picture in the paper. It was one of those lovingly retouched executive-type photographs of a man in his late 40s or early 50s, graying at the temples and wearing an embalmed man of distinction look. The story was headlined, Corporation Head Waylaid by Mysterious Assailant. Chauffeur foils would-be kidnappers at offices of Martini Trading Company. The item under it wasn't as thrilling as the headline. Sounded as if he'd been knocked down for his wallet and the attempted kidnapping had been dreamed up by a bored city news reporter. I tossed it into the wastebasket along with my morning mail and went back to the Police Gazette. On page 3, the phone rang. Unique Garage, Harry speaking.
Mr. Spade?
One moment. Who's calling?
Gordon Martini.
Not Gordon Martini, the corporation head waylaid by mysterious assailant.
Chairman of the board, and there's nothing mysterious about it.
Then what are you doing on this phone?
I can't talk on the phone.
Where are you? In a hospital?
I left that pest house this morning. I'm at my residence, 1000 Marina Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
It will take you exactly 20 minutes by cab. You will meet me in front of the building and we'll have our conference in my car en route to the office.
Where's your office?
Downtown Post Street.
Well, why don't I meet you there?
I'm a busy man. Have a full calendar. I'm already late due to all that hospital red tape. but I can fit you into my schedule if you'll hurry. Now, look alive, man.
Well, it's a little early in the morning, but I'm trying hard.
Good. What will you want for a retainer?
I'll let you know if I decide to take the job.
Fair enough. 20 minutes. I'll expect you.
I should have looked more alive. It took me 2 minutes to get onto the street, 1 minute to flag down a cab, and 18 minutes to reach your address, Netta. A total of 21 minutes. As my taxi drew up to the curb in front of the canopied entrance to the corner apartment house at 1000 Marina, I saw your husband pacing indignantly up and down in front of the entrance, pausing only to glare at the outsized chronometer on his left wrist. His gray Homburg was perched atop an outsized turban of gauze bandage that decorated his head.
Ah, you're spade. You're exactly 1 minute and 22 seconds late. Hours are made of minutes, minutes are made of seconds. In killing this seemingly negligible interval of time, you have wounded an hour.
Oh, I have. Well, I'm sorry. The traffic's pretty heavy out here this hour of the morning, you know.
You should have started a minute and 22 seconds earlier.
I'm sorry, there was a bore on the telephone, kept talking about how valuable his time was.
Yeah, well, don't apologize. Only waste more time. Now, here's your check, $100. My car's just around the corner. I paid that chauffeur a large salary. We mustn't keep him waiting. In the meantime, you may as well start earning your fee.
I've been earning it for the past 22 minutes and 22 seconds.
Wait. I suspected as much. You drive a car?
Yeah, you mean one man drives all that?
I see him, that rascally chauffeur of mine. Sleep in the back seat. All right, come out of there, you.
Hey, watch! I was behind him and a little to the right. The shock of the rapid-fire 30-caliber slugs lifted him off his feet and knocked him against me. I went down under his 300 pounds of dead weight. By the time I rolled him off of me and got up, the gunman had jumped out of the limousine and into a gray sedan that was double-parked alongside. In the welter of traffic on the boulevard, I didn't dare risk throwing a shot after him, but I did get the first three numbers of the license plate before it buried itself in the heavy stream of AM commuters. That's when the air changed from exhaust fumes to something out of a Persian garden. I turned and looked for the first time into your Nile green eyes, Netta, and saw you twisting a handkerchief in your pale hands I might have loved beside the Shalimar, but on Marina Boulevard they looked like hysterics dead ahead.
Who did it? You saw him. Don't lie to me. Why don't they come with the ambulance? Why are all those people standing around there staring at me? Make them go
calm
away.
Down.
Make them go away. I can't stand it.
Now, stop it, will you? That's better. Now, come on over here. Who are you, his wife?
Yes, and it was all my fault. This is the end. I called Ernie out the window and asked him to come upstairs. I wanted him to return some lingerie. They sent the wrong color, peach.
Yeah. Who's Ernie?
He's our chauffeur. I was looking for the exchange slip when we heard the shots. Is he dead this time?
Yeah, don't go to pieces.
Poor Gordon, he had so many enemies. He didn't drink well, you know. People dropped us like flies.
Well, they certainly dropped your husband.
Are you a policeman?
No, but I'll do until the real thing comes along, which is right now. If I were you, lady, I'd go back upstairs and relax. They'll get to you soon enough.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Poor Gordon, he looks so natural stretched out on the pavement.
Yeah.
I keep thinking he'll get up and stagger on into the elevator. He didn't drink at all well.
Go on, will you?
All right, I'm going. Oh, Ernie, where did you go?
Down to the garage. I heard a car driving. Poor Mr. Martini, it's all my fault.
No, Ernie, it's mine. If I only hadn't mislaid that exchange slip.
What?
You know, when I called you out the window to come and get that package.
Oh, that.
What do we got here? Who's the witness?
Me.
Oh, Spade. Lost another client, huh?
Not quite. I hadn't cashed the check yet.
Well, they got him anyway. All right, clear a space in there. Let him through with that stretcher.
All right.
Step over here out of the crowd, Sam. I want to get this statement.
Hey. Yeah.
All right, turn the way, please.
Okay, Gary, take it down.
Got a pencil?
Yeah, and I want it back.
Let's have it.
This guy is Gordon Martini.
Mm-hmm.
He headed up a local firm, the Martini Trading Company.
Yeah.
Last night he was working late at his office. Got boinged.
All right.
Phoned me this morning. Didn't know why. Thought maybe he wanted a bodyguard. Anyway, he needed one.
Mm-hmm.
Gunman was crouched in the back seat of the limousine, shoved the carbine out when Martini opened the door.
Carbine, huh?
Didn't get a good look at him. You can see why, the way it's closed in. No side windows.
Mm. Foreign car, isn't it?
Stop drooling. You can't afford one. You getting all this?
What about the getaway?
Martini fell on top of me. I saw the getaway car on the back of his head.
Yeah.
The car was a gray sedan. The back of his head was a standard make, too. Only got the first three digits of license plate, 5D9.
5D9. Anything else?
Yeah, give me back my pencil. The homicide boys want some help. They know my fee.
Mr. Spade.
Mrs. Martini. Why aren't you and Ernie upstairs getting your alibis shaped up?
Oh, please, I can't face the questions just yet. Would it be legal if I just avoided them till I can collect myself?
I don't know about legal, but it might be smart.
Where can we talk?
What do you suggest?
Well, there's a little cocktail lounge up on Lombard where Ernie and I all... it's just around the corner.
Very handy. Let's go.
Against my mother's advice, I should have listened, but, well, that's why I married Mr. Martini.
Well, that brings us up to 1943, and it's only 11:45.
You're just like him, always holding a stopwatch over my head.
Always?
Well, he drank, you know.
You told me that.
But it's much more important than you think. He often fell down and bumped his head.
You mean that mysterious assailant that waylaid him last night in his office was a double martini?
Two pitchers full before dinner.
Two?
Ernie had to carry him up to his office.
Well, what did he go up there for?
Oh, he had an appointment with the vice president of the firm, Mr. Nesbitt. Something had come up and he wanted Gordon to sign some papers. I don't know what. It wasn't the first time. I waited outside in the car. After Ernie had taken him upstairs, he came back to the car and we talked.
Mm-hmm. Ernie has alibis upstairs, downstairs, and all around the house.
Well, then when the others came out and Gordon didn't, Ernie went upstairs to see why.
Others? Mr. Nesbitt and who else?
Mary Callahan.
Secretary?
No, she's an attorney. And if you think everything was legal between those two, well... but after all, who am I to call the kettle black?
Now, what are you trying to tell me? That you got him drunk so they could make him sign some papers? That he got himself drunk so he couldn't write his name? Or that he just got drunk and fell down?
Between you and me, I think she pushed him down a flight of stairs. In his condition, he'd never remember.
Why are you putting the finger on the Callahan dame?
Well, what would you think? She was the last one out of the building.
Why didn't you want to tell all this to the police?
Well, I didn't want to talk about his drinking. Things were bad enough already. That would have been the end.
Well, that's as good an answer as any. What do you want me to do for you?
Prove that she did it and Ernie didn't.
I'll let you take care of Ernie.
Oh, no. I don't want to alibi him unless I have to. He might get the wrong idea.
You mean I've got the wrong idea?
He might think it meant I still care for him, and I don't. I can't stand him anymore. The way he chews those toothpicks. And besides, if his alibi is too good, I might have trouble about that car being in the backseat of my car.
Pardon me, it sounded as if you said you might have trouble about a car being in the backseat of your car.
That's what I said.
Where is your car?
In the garage. But somebody had it out this morning. They scraped the fender coming back in and they ran into the wall. They must have been in an awful hurry.
Tell me, this car of yours, it wouldn't be a gray sedan?
Yes.
License number?
Oh, wait a minute. It's on my key ring. Here, 5D90...
That's enough. Why didn't you tell me this before?
Well, I couldn't get up the nerve. After I heard you tell that policeman the gun that killed Gordon was a carbine and the gray sedan and all that, well, it's the end.
I hoped you were right, but I didn't think so. When I went to look at the gray sedan in your garage, I knew you were wrong, dead wrong. It was the getaway car, all right, and the carbine, as you know, was proven later to be the one that killed your husband. But Ernie had turned into a very poor suspect indeed. He was hugging the carpet between the front and rear seats, and when I nudged him, he didn't move. He'd been shot at closer range than Gordon Martini, and the killer had used only one slug. It was planted in the base of his brain, which made him not only a very poor suspect, but a very dead one.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And now, back to the dry martini caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Martini Trading Company, good afternoon. I'm sorry, Mr. Nesbitt is in conference. I'll see that he gets your message. Well, what can I do for you?
I would like to see Miss Callahan.
Miss Callahan is in conference with Mr. Nesbitt.
Good. I would like to see them both.
But I have orders not to disturb them.
You do not have to. I will.
Just a minute. You can't go breaking in like that.
Yes, and I'll tell you something else. You won't ever get away with it. Why, everyone in this town knows about your underworld connection.
Why, you doddering old fool, when I get through with you, if you don't go to the gas chamber for Gordon Martini's murder, you'll wish you had.
If I go to the gas chamber, it'll be for killing you, not Gordon.
Oh, you said it all. Why didn't I have witnesses here?
Miss Callahan?
Oh. Did you hear that?
You weren't talking loud enough. I didn't hear a thing.
Well, come on in here and I'll tell you a thing or two. Close that door. Now, sit down.
Thanks. I listen better on my feet.
Oh, so you're the detective Netta Martini employed, eh? What's she paying you?
That'll depend on how much I have to do for her.
Well, I'll tell you how much you'll have to do for her. You'll have to make a case against me, and that's not going to be easy.
Why do you think she's out to get you?
Why, indeed. For years, this moth-eaten mouthpiece, this parboiled Porsche, has been victimizing poor Gordon, taking advantage of his weakness for drink. Now that she's liquidated him, she appears with 55% of the common stock. Motive enough, eh?
Why, well, you fraudulent old fool. I simply bought up his debts and threw an attachment on those stocks. Unethical, but perfectly legal.
Look,
you're not even a proper thief. You're nothing but a bumbling old embezzler.
Now, listen
here. You had to kill because he was going to call in the auditors and look over those books of yours. The Dean of Double Entry, Mr. Spade.
Look, will you save this for the courtroom scene? Now, you've convinced me. You're both crooked. I'll see that you both go up for something. That's a promise.
Oh, Mr. Spade, I gave you credit for better sense. Do you know that this Medusa of the magistrate's court, this harpy of the Hall of Justice, tricked him into changing the beneficiary of his insurance the very night she pushed him down the stairs?
And you were all in favor of it when you thought you held a controlling interest in the company? Answer that. You see, Mr. Spade, he can answer that.
Good. I'm glad one of you is temporarily at a loss for words. Now, I only want to know one thing, and I want a straight answer. And if either one of you starts off on another speech, I'm going to push you into the nearest cloakroom and lock you in together.
Why, you wouldn't dare.
Try me, sweetheart.
Well, what do you want to know about this Amazon ambulance chaser, this Trilby of the traffic course?
Watch it.
Well, what do you want to know?
About Martini's insurance policy. Now, you say he changed the beneficiary. Please answer in 10 words or less. Who was the beneficiary, and who is the beneficiary now?
I'll have to answer that question in 2 parts. The beneficiary was his wife. He changed it to the Martini Trading Company, a corporation of the state of California.
Thank you, and goodbye, Mary Callahan. And that Netta took the heat off of you for the time being, which made things tough for me. Because Callahan and Nesbitt were so horrible, I never wanted to see them again, even to testify against them in court. I was sure of one thing. None of you had pulled the trigger of that carbine. There'd been a hired killer behind it, and the way he operated, taking crazy chances in broad daylight in a crowded street, told me an important thing about it. That night, I made the rounds of the joints. At a plant called the Bing Room, I found a bouncer who'd tossed out a customer that run up a bill and tried to pay it with a $1,000 check. He sent me to the Atlas Hotel. The Atlas Hotel is off of 3rd Street down near the railroad yards. Not even a flea bag. The fleas sickened and died a long time ago. They couldn't take it. And from the look of the guests sprawled out in the mission furniture of the lobby, they wouldn't be able to much longer. A half-dead room clerk came back to the land of the living long enough to mutter a room number and wave me feebly toward a flight of crummy stairs.
Yeah, what do you want?
You, Hack Hartman?
Hey, you got anything for me, huh?
Yeah, I got news for you. Get back in the room. I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah. Well, come on in.
Drop the shiv.
Yeah, I'll drop it. I'll fix you. I'll cut you good. I'll cut you.
I'm glad you did that. You make it easy for me. Now get over there.
Leave me alone. I'm not feeling so good.
You can feel a lot worse. Who hired you to put the burn on Martini?
You don't get nothing out of me.
Who gave you that check?
Oh, leave me alone.
I got all night, Hack, and I feel better than you do. Now, what did you do with that check? I'll shake it if your teeth come out with it. Come on.
All right. Stop it. I don't feel so good.
Okay. Where?
Pocket. My shirt.
Don't reach. I'll get it. It was a company check, which is what I'd expected. It was for $1,000 drawn on the Golden Gate Trust and Loan. But I wasn't expecting to find the signature on the bottom line. It was signed in a bold, firm hand, Gordon Martini. was the penman on this?
He wrote it himself, right in front of me.
What was it supposed to be for?
He wanted I should knock off his brother.
You get mixed up?
Well, he's dead, ain't he?
That's what I mean. Gordon Martini's dead.
Ah, the papers got it wrong. That was his brother, his twin brother. And that other guy, that chauffeur, kept hanging around the garage so I couldn't get out. I had to burn him, too.
You know what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm making sense. Now get out of here. I'm getting steamed.
Don't let it worry you. I got a nice, cool place all picked out for you. After I turned Hack over to the cops, I did what checking I could on my own at that time of night. As nearly as I could learn, Gordon Martini could never have had a brother, twin or otherwise. He was a first child, his mother died in childbirth, and his father died 1 month later. So I went back to the offices of the Martini Trading Company, glass-keyed my way in, and made a quick frisk of it. There I learned that the signature on the check was indeed Gordon's, but that he had closed out his account at that bank the day he wrote it. I thought about that on the way out to your apartment.
Sam, I've been calling and calling, trying to reach you. I've been so worried. It's the end.
This time, you might be right. Fix me a drink.
Well, there's nothing in the house but those prepared martinis Gordon used to drink. Is that all right?
No, but fixing me one anyway. Never mind the ice. It's not morning yet, but I hate myself already.
Why don't you just relax and let me get it for you?
I'll relax. You get the martinis.
What happened? What'd you think of Mary Callahan? Isn't she the end?
She's cute. You're all cute.
All of me? How nice. I put ice in anyway. It's nasty without.
It's nasty anyway.
I hope it doesn't make you fall down the way it did poor Gordon.
Thanks.
What? Well, what's the matter? Too dry?
You open this bottle fresh?
Why, yes. What's the matter?
Where are they? The rest of the bottles. Oh, yeah. More of the same. Is this all your husband ever drank?
Yes, gallons of it. It's a special brand. He even took it with him to bars and people's houses. He'd sit and drink them right out of the bottle like a little child. Then he'd be falling down drunk, of course. And that's how we lost so many friends. They dropped us like
flies. Yeah, it was the end.
Who are you phoning?
City morgue.
Maxie, Sam Spade.
Sammy, what can I do on you?
On Martini, Maxie. They got around to the autopsy yet?
Yeah, they rushed him through.
Got the report handy?
Right in front of me. Funny thing, Sam. The doc said they should have saved themselves the trouble. He'd have been dead in a week or two without no help.
What from?
Brain tumor. Malignant, it says here.
Any alcohol in him?
None from drinking, Sammy.
What about the head wounds?
Accidental fall due to periodic fainting spells. Part of his condition.
Thanks, Maxie.
Well, what is it, Sam? Were the martinis poisoned?
No, sweetheart. The martinis were colored water.
Why, they couldn't. Well, what made him get so drunk?
He didn't. He was sick.
But, Sam, who killed him?
Killed himself.
But he couldn't have.
He hired a gunman to do it. He planned his own murder.
But that... why didn't he leave a note or something? He could have ruined us all.
Come here, sweetheart. Put your little head on Uncle Sam's shoulder.
Why, Sam...
That's just what he wanted you to do. He wanted to ruin you. He let Mary Callahan fleece him out of his interest in the company. He let Nesbitt juggle the books. He let you go your way with Ernie. You let all three of you fix yourselves up with as nice a set of motives for murder as a jury could ask for.
Oh, he couldn't have.
The real joker was the check he used to pay off the man he hired to kill him. It bounced. It also proved he'd planned his own murder. But he still has his revenge. Because the insurance that would have kept the corporation from going broke won't be paid off on account of the self-liquidating cause.
Oh, Sam, darling, what's going to become of us all?
Well, Callahan and Nesbitt will probably sue each other to death. You might have to go to work and earn a living.
Well, I have $500. I might invest it in something.
You already have. Here's my bill.
But, Sam, you didn't help me. What? This is the end.
No, it isn't, sweetheart. This is the beginning. Come here. Period. End of the end.
Well, you ask me. You helped her.
Now, F.
Well, that just goes to show you.
Show what, F?
Man's ingratitude to man.
Hmm?
What did Mr. Martini have against you?
Why, nothing, sweetheart. He just needed a smart operator like, Johnny Madero was on
vacation.
Sam. Hmm?
Have you cashed that check Mr. Martini gave you?
Well, not yet.
Sam, any bartender would know better than to take a check from a man who drinks that much?
F, you haven't been paying attention. He didn't drink. He didn't. I was able to establish that later on.
Well,
you haven't been listening.
Well, at the time, Sam, for all anybody knew, he was a hopeless drunk. He was, Sam. Oh, you're so wonderful and trusting. But I do wish that you'd understand this. He was a hopeless drunk.
For the last time, Effie, he didn't really drink.
I'll just type this up, Sam, while you call the bank.
I'll do that.
Worth the price of the paper and carbons.
You made carbon copies of that, an unimportant report like that?
Oh, it bounced?
Well, the estate isn't settled yet.
Oh, Sam, you're so wonderful and trusting.
Effie, I am not wonderful and trusting. I am a hard-boiled private eye.
I know. It's just a pity there's no money in it.
And I'm also two-fisted.
Sam.
Hmm?
Have you ever thought of ceramics?
Of what?
Ceramics. It takes virtually no capital. All you need is a small furnace and some clay. And if you don't have any talent, you can just make ashtrays.
Thanks, I already have one.
Oh, flower pots are fun. You can pot them on a wheel.
And you can pot your hat on and wheel on out of here and also take your furnace and clay.
Oh, I love you when you're so gay and carefree.
I am not gay and carefree.
You are a hard-boiled private eye. Good night, sir.
Good night, and sue me for your back salary, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of August, 1948 on CBS. And so closes this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.